and I'm going to say it here first. The biggest lie we were ever told as humans is that we were supposed to eat meat. And they showed me my blood and it was like cream colored with a little bit of pink in it. It was like pinkish cream. And they said, you see those chunks floating in it, those white chunks? That is fat in your blood. Anybody that's still eating meat now watching this, I'm telling you, your life will light up. You will feel happier for no other reason, just knowing that you're not contributing to killing any animals. Kids and parents need more ethics.
Hi there, and welcome to Plant CEO. In today's episode, I'd like to welcome Redfoo, the father, the party rocker, and the vegan coder to the show. Hey, Redfoo, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all good. Where are you dialing in from?
From Montanito, California, which is in the middle of Calabasas and Malibu.
It's great to speak to you. Most people will know you from the band LMFAO with your hits Party Rock Anthem and Sexy and I Know It, but also you as a solo artist from New Thang, Let's Get Ridiculous, Juicy Wiggle, and which were all fantastic songs, by the way. And it's great to have entertainment in the world of hip hop to some degree, which you don't always get.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that you know, growing up, I watched a lot of Motown artists, you know, live, Rick James, Stevie Wonder, Jackson 5. I saw a lot of videos of that. We used to go to Michael Jackson's concerts. So the entertaining factor has always been important to me. Used to do improv comedy and all that stuff. So we kind of treated the show like a big improvised musical party, entertaining stuff, and wrote songs just for fun, you know, wrote them for the community, for people to have fun.
It's great that you have those musical influences with your father being Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown. So yeah, it's amazing that you got to see Stevie Wonder and the Jackson 5 too.
It was incredible seeing them. And the most important thing that I feel like I got from, you know, the Motown family is that they were such good people and quite normal people when they weren't on stage. And when I would see Smokey Robinson playing tennis with my dad or playing chess, them competing and yelling and cracking jokes. And there was no like that weird, I'm a artist or celebrity and you guys are not, you know, it was just, everything was family and friends. And that really influenced me to be that type of person or artist. And that's my vibe. Just really cool, friendly with everybody. It doesn't matter if you're an artist or not, or this, that. We all come from being a kid and being in this world and, you know, having dreams and just doing stuff. But being a nice person is very important.
That's great to hear. And so let's talk about your own vegan journey. How did it start? Where did it begin? Did you happen to see or talk to somebody or watch a documentary? How did it all start for you?
It kind of started when I was a kid. I was hanging around my stepsister, Rhonda, and she brought some friends over. And I was about 14 or 15, and they were into kind of like spirituality and stuff. And they were talking about, we're all a soul, you know, all people. And they said, there's a spiritual world out there where everybody's a soul. And the human body is kind of like just a, you know, it's a vehicle for different souls, but it could be a lion has a soul and a dog has a soul, an elephant and fish have soul, you know. And they said, in the spiritual world, we don't kill anything with a soul kind of thing. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And I really looked up to these people because they were just so smart to me and their energy was so great. And so I said, well, that's it. I'm not going to eat anything with eyeballs or that has a soul. And I guess that was me being vegetarian because they didn't say anything about cheese or milk or dairy or you know, anything like that, eggs. And I did that for 6 years. And it was just my own thing. It was an ethical thing. And I didn't know about really what went on with the slaughterhouses at that time. I wasn't going to put this dead flesh and kind of contribute to that, but just from my own personal stuff. And so I ate a lot of pasta. I just had everything just without the meat. Didn't focus on getting extra protein or B12. That wasn't, you know, just a lot of everyday things, but just no steak or chicken or fish or anything like that. For a lot of the LMFAO stuff in the beginning, I was vegetarian as well. And then you get around, I got into Hollywood and got around other people, and then it just kind of faded away, that spiritual, you know, and I didn't know those people anymore. They were more my sister's friends. And I went back, this is around like 20 years old. I started, I had a turkey burger, but I noticed things were different. I started gaining a lot of weight, you know, and I noticed that physically was different from not having meat for like 6 years. And I would go off and on. And then, speaking of my dad, he was talking to some doctors, and, you know, my dad now is 94.
Wow, amazing.
And I think about like 20 years ago, somewhere around there, could be 25, he had high blood pressure all the time. And he talked to his doctors, and he would get the best doctors. I mean, he would say, I want the experts on high blood pressure, you know, heart disease. He did not want to get clogged arteries or anything like that. And I think it was some doctors that had advised Bill Clinton. When he had a triple bypass or something like that.
You obviously have lost weight since you left the presidency. You've gone on a vegan diet. Isn't that hard to do? And
less burgers.
How did you
not
do that?
When you have quadruple heart bypass and you want to live to be a grandfather. I didn't give it a second thought. I said, you know, I realized that I was highly prone to arterial blockage, and I thought I'd cut my chances. I literally wanted to see if I could live to be a grandfather. I said, you know, I think I'd like to hang around. I'm kind of having a good time being alive, and it'll be over sick soon enough, and I think I'll just stretch it out as long as I can.
I just remember my dad and the doctors coming over, and I remember this thing that they said. They said that if you cut out animal products, it is impossible to have a heart attack from cholesterol or clogged arteries. Like, if you're not eating animal products, it's just not gonna, there's no cholesterol buildup and all of that stuff. And then I just remember hearing that, and my dad was like, boom, I'm going vegan. He went raw vegan, and he was able to get off all his medications, and he did some other exercise work and stuff like that as well. And he's been vegan ever since. Now,
no way. So 20 years.
He's been vegan 25 years.
No way.
And he did it from not so much of a vegan ethical thing, but more of a health thing for him. And I didn't change over because I was in the mindset, well, you know, that's him. He's doing that because of his circumstances. I think he was around, could have been 70 or something. And I still flirted around with it. Then I would still go back and forth. I even did keto when I was on Dancing with the Stars. I met Suzanne Summers, and she was talking about keto and all this stuff, the late great. And people were concerned. And so my girlfriend at the time, she said, you need to go get a physical. You need to get your blood work because you're eating a lot of stuff. And at this time, you know, I had forgot about the spiritual stuff. You know, really, I was just, you know, this was about, I think like 8 years ago or something like that. And I went to the doctors and they were shocked. They saw my blood and they showed me my blood, and it was like cream colored with a little bit of pink in it. It was like pinkish cream. And they said, you see those chunks floating in it, those white chunks? That is fat in your blood. And my cholesterol, they said, was over 600.
Wow. And so the fat was basically the animal fat that you were overconsuming when you were doing the keto diet, right?
Exactly. And that's what I believe. And you wouldn't believe it. The doctors said, what is your diet? What are you eating? And they go, are you eating a lot of pasta? And I said, no, I'm not eating pasta at all.
You don't have any carbs
or sugar. Yeah. So I said, no, I'm not. And they were like trying to figure it out. And I said, all I'm eating is meat, chicken, bacon. And they go, really? They go, And it was like they were oblivious. And I said, okay, I know what I'm going to do. They go, hey, we got to put you on medication. I said, no, I've only been doing this for like a month and a half. I know what I got to do. I'm going to come back in a month. I'm going to get my levels back to normal. And they go, normally we would not even let you leave. This is so alarming. I said, and I felt good mentally. I had abs. I was working out, right? But internally, I was headed for my deathbed. So I came back in a month. And what I did is I cut out everything. I think I still ate fish. And I came back and it was still sparingly because I knew it was the meat. I knew it was the animal stuff because from what my dad said. So I come back and they take my blood and it's red. They were in more shock. They said, when you first came in, we were shocked because of the high cholesterol and all that stuff. But we're more shocked because we've never seen someone go down from 600 back to normal levels in 1 month. Like we've never, without medication, they said, what did you do? What did you do? And I said, I just stopped eating like 95% of the meat. And they were like floored. And I knew from then on, health-wise, that was the result of eating the meat. So I went on a cleanse. I went on the master cleanse, you know, the one with maple syrup, lemon juice, water, and cayenne pepper. Then I did that. And this is what turned me vegan, basically. I did the lemon cleanse, and it hadn't been the first time I've done it. I did it before, and I did 10 days. And I read the pamphlet, and it said, okay, after I was just liquid diet for 10 days, and I felt great, and my mind was racing. And this is when I started getting into coding because I felt smart. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I was talking a lot and just dealing with people. I felt so much better. They said, just go back to an orange, eat an orange the first day, maybe some fruit for the next, 1 or 2 days. And then they said, if you eat meat, wait like 2 weeks. And I was like, is this, what do you mean if you eat meat? And I was like, are they plant-based? Like, why would they say that? And the book was just, it was like, the guy was like, I personally don't eat meat, but if you choose to, just don't do it because it's not really good for you and all this stuff. But I mean, don't do it for 2 weeks and just let your body adjust because it's really. And I was like, wow. So I started researching it and the feeling, the vision of eating meat after a liquid fast was disgusting to me. It was because the meat's too complex. It's the blood, the fat, the skin, it has to be cooked. There was too many variables. And all I wanted was chickpeas. I was like, can I just get some hummus? Can I eat? I mean, eating a chickpea was like complex to me after a liquid diet. And I felt in heaven after a chickpea. And I started eating chickpea salads. And I wanted to keep my energy and I wanted to keep all this feeling of feeling so good. And so I ate chickpeas. And I had some fruits and then salads, and I just continued to feel good. And I said, okay, I'm never going to eat meat again. I'm done. And then my girlfriend, Jasmine, who's my partner now, mother of our child, she goes, yeah, let's go vegan. And I said, okay. And then I was like, what's the difference between vegan and vegetarian, right? I didn't really know. And so we started watching documentaries. And that's when we watched Fork Over Knives. We watched What the Health. We got into Cowspiracy, and we were floored. We had no clue about the industry and the farming practices. And because, they kind of keep that hidden from everybody, like what goes on in the slaughterhouse. I started subscribing to Earthling Ed and other vegan, Joey Carbstrong, just like getting in the community. And I started thinking about my own life. And I remember when I had killed a bird, it started like all coming to me. And I remembered the spiritual thing when I did, and those people told me. And then I felt, and I remember I killed a bird. I used to be obsessed with shooting BB guns with cans. And I used to shoot at birds as a kid, because they'd fly away. It was like a target, and I never hit one for like 2-3 years, you know. And finally, I shot one and it hit a bird. And this was a kid. I was like probably 8, 9 years old. And that bird dropped and was looking at me, you know, dying on the floor with his eyes and breathing. And it was like looking at, and I felt so bad as a kid. And I said, I'm never going to kill another bird again. And I never did. But I grew up fishing. And I started thinking about all this stuff. And I was like, why did I fish? And I was asking these questions. And I said, my mom would celebrate like, oh, you caught a fish and you can feed the family. And I said, no, we never eat the fish. We just go to the pier and catch it. And it's such a game for a kid. And I was like, yeah, my stepfather would praise me. Oh, you catch a fish. And it was like a competition. Who could catch the fish, you know? And I had a birthday where we went on a fishing boat. This was during LMFAO, by the way. And this is another weird thing. Everybody caught a fish on the fishing boat because I was like, hey, let's go. And this is before I went vegan, you know. Right. I'm skipping around here. But I didn't catch one. Everybody, you know, it's one of those boats where you just put it in and catch. And I was like, that's weird. And I got sick. So the next year, I had another fishing party. And I was like, okay, this year I'm gonna catch a fish. Cause and like I said, this is before, you know, the cleanse and the vegan. And I was thinking about all this stuff. I didn't catch one the second year. Everybody, and I got seasick again. And I said, okay, this is something. And I said, I don't even care. I was like, I don't even want to catch, I don't want to kill the fish. I feel weird at the hooks and even the worms and the thing. And so Jasmine was like, yeah, we're vegan. And I was like, well, I'm doing it because of my health. So we're back to the after the cleanse. Yeah. And she got into the animal stuff.
Mm.
And it's a funny thing is that I said, okay, I'm strict. When I want to do something, I was like, okay, I cut out. It was easy to cut out the meat. The cheese, I wanted to learn how to make cashew cheese or fake cheese, you know, like mock cheese, that cheesy thing. And I did. I learned how to do it with the cashews and nutritional yeast. Now we do potatoes. You could do anything. Chickpeas, as long as you got that nutritional yeast and the salt and the garlic and anyways. So we learned how to cook too. Like we're cooking everything. Pizzas with the new cashew cheese and our goal is to like make everything taste, you know, amazing. And then she, in the first 2 weeks, she goes, well, I'm going to go back to eating some fish. And I said, well, what about the animals? What happened to that? And she's like, well, I'm going to eat some fish. So then that night she got food poisoning because she ate fish and I didn't. Mm. And she got real sick, stomach, you know, she started looking up the stuff in salmon and the worms and stuff, and it was even making her more sick.
Well, and hang on a minute. There's worms in salmon? I haven't heard about that.
Oh, yeah.
Really? I thought it was mainly a lot of plastics and mercury.
Oh, there's plastic and mercury, and then you can look it up. Go look it up after this stuff. There's a lot of worms and parasites and stuff in the fish.
Oh, that's nasty.
Yeah, there's people pulling out long worm kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah, the fish is...
It must have been a sign, right? Her getting ill, you getting ill on the boat, not catching any fish. There was some universal truth behind all that with perhaps spirituality. It feels that you've become more spiritual.
Absolutely. Way more connected to the animals, the earth. And I actually feel lighter, like... People don't understand the ethical, when you decide to stop eating meat, for whatever the reason, it could be health. Sometimes it's health. People want to lose weight. Then you start being in the community and then you start learning about the ethics and the killing and how they treat the dairy cows and they just slam them around and and you're just like, oh my, you know. And then just the biasness of like, oh, a meat eater wouldn't eat their dog, but they would eat their cow, you know? And it's like, but what's the difference between a dog and a cow? And it's like, well, I don't know. A dog is my pet. You know, it's like, there's no, right? Or what's the difference between a pig? And now we actually just rescued 2 pigs 3 days ago. So wow. I have Two new pigs. I have two cows.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
Five dogs and two chickens and a turkey. And a turkey.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, but what you said was interesting, like the signs, you know, whether it's the spiritual stuff. I think for Jasmine, when she ate that fish and I didn't, it was just a scientific thing. Like, this is food poisoning is way more likely to happen on a meat dish.
Yeah.
Because there's way more variables and there's way more E. coli is coming from the animals.
Exactly.
It's, you know, everybody says, oh, well, there's E. coli in spinach. Well, it didn't come from the spinach.
It came from the fertilizer. Yeah.
It came from the fertilizer or human, you know, feces in general, animal
exactly.
or
human. Yeah.
And there's so many facts that we don't know. I think the biggest lie, and I'm going to say it here first, the biggest lie we were ever told as humans is that we were supposed to eat meat.
Yeah.
That's the biggest lie growing up. It's the biggest, and it's the number one moneymaker. We can unpack that later, but
yeah.
From what I've realized, we've been lied to. Just look at our teeth, look at the way we have no claws. We couldn't even kill a deer.
Yeah. And look at the fat that we see in color. So we can see the wonderful differences in the fruits and the plants that we want to eat, right?
Yeah, we know about ripeness, right? If it's red, apples red is ripe, you know, or what. So that's amazing. And that's the first time thank you for sharing that, because that's amazing. And I'm going to add that and research that now, because that's incredible what you're saying. And I get what you're saying, that the humans, we have the ability to discern different types of colors and all that stuff. I'm really into that, the colors and pitch, even in music. So that's big that you said. Love that.
Yeah. Let me share a story, like just from my personal side. Like when I went through a similar journey from turning, I was vegetarian all my life, realized the harm the dairy industry does from even being a vegetarian, that you're complicit in some ways to the meat industry by consuming dairy. I had watched the same documentaries you did, and we went to a family holiday to Glastonbury, not to the festival, but, you know, around Glastonbury. And I was walking past a field with some cows, and then I was with my brother-in-law, and you know, some cows came towards this fence, and one came over and it was kind of walking towards me. And I thought, wow, it's, you know, so nice to see this, you know, cow up front. And the rest of the cows came along as a massive herd then towards me. And I felt they were all like looking at me saying, well, you know this stuff now that's happened. Like, you've watched this. This is what's going in my head, right? You watch these documentaries. What are you going to do? And I said to my brother-in-law, I said, oh, wow, this has happened. He goes, no, they're just protecting themselves. They're a herd. That's what he thought. I was completely different. And that kind of led me on the path to kind of create this show, like to bring awareness, to bring amazing stories like you've just told me today to the general public. So, you know, I feel people have different signs, and I'm definitely for that. Like, and nature and animals are also so intuitive. They're probably even more spiritual than we are as humans, I feel.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because they're not persuaded by TV, by the news, by special interest groups, the corporations, the commercials of a model eating a burger and it fall, you know, they're not.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we live in a consumer-based world, and everything is money. In the end of the day, the people, I bet you at the slaughterhouses, you see the documentaries now with Pignorant out.
Yeah.
They don't even like what they're doing, but they need the money. You know, it's like the tobacco industry. It's like they know cigarettes are bad and vaping is, they know it kills people, but they want to make money. And that's the thing. Ethics are easy to uphold until you start waving some money around.
Yeah. You're quite passionate about the vegan community, but let's talk about the economics behind it. And I think, you know, perhaps what you were alluding to before was that as a meat industry is so ingrained in government because of the capital side of it and the subsidies, not necessarily do a lot of countries support the science, which, as you know, some countries have started to do a lot better, like, for example, in the Netherlands and Canada, to follow the science, especially when it comes to consuming meat and dairy and fish. What do you think needs to be done, especially from a community aspect, to draw more money into this?
I guess there's a bunch of levels to the vegan economics. I think the main one that you and I can do and everybody can do is the concept of voting with your dollar, right? Where you're spending your money. And I would love for there to be a documentary, maybe we make one, where you take a $10 bill or something. I know cash is going out. The idea of, and say you give this to a mom and pop vegan restaurant, and they have the burger. It's a vegan restaurant. You give them your $10. They're going to take that $10. And let's say they're a vegan themselves, right? And let's say their workers are vegan at the mom and pop's local vegan place. You give them your $10 for the sandwich. They're going to take that $10. They're going to put it in their cash register, and they're going to pay their vegan employee with that money. They're going to buy some more materials from the vegan food suppliers, the vegan vendors. It could be Beyond. It could be Impossible. It could be the tofu that they buy or the beans they make for their patties, right? And then if they're true vegans, well, they don't wear leather shoes, and they're going to take that $10, break it up, and they're going to go buy some vegan shoes or buy a Tesla with vegan leather option. You know, now all of them are, but there was a time where you had to explicitly ask for faux leather or the BMWs. You know, there was a time. And as a vegan now, because remember, vegan means, the definition is, you know, we don't harm or exploit animals.
Full stop.
It's not a diet. It extends to your diet, right? But it just means that. Right. And that, and a lot of people are confused on that, and we can get to that. But now you, so that mom and pops, right? And then you're keeping that mom and pop in business because they're paying their workers. Now, next door to the mom and pops, there's a Burger King, and they have a vegan option, the Impossible Whopper. And as a vegan now, me and you were walking, and we say, let's not go to the vegan mom and pops who has the same Impossible burger. Let's go try the Burger King one because it has options for us. We give them our $10 to Burger King. They take it, and that money goes back all the way to the butcher. You know, they got to, you know, for the other, they have one product, you know, that, you know, the rest of the products, they have to pay the workers there that could possibly not be vegan, right? That are going to go buy the leather Nikes and the leather shoes or whatever they are. And now that $10 is not being circulated in the vegan community. Yeah, they'll buy some more Impossible, but it'll be a small percent. The rest of that, you know, it'll be 50 cents of that $10, the rest will go back to the farm that's kicking the dairy cows, getting them in line, chopping the heads off, doing all that stuff. And this is what the vegan community didn't see coming, because I knew a friend that was running a magazine. And I said, wait, you're doing all these articles about the Burger King. And I tried it, you know, I didn't understand, but now as we see that the vegan mom and pop stores, some of them are closing down, and it's because of the competition from the, now you can get a vegan burger at all of the, well, it's not truly vegan, right? It's a plant-based burger, 'cause not a vegan establishment, right?
Yeah.
So you can go to the Chinese restaurant, and they may have now, and it's called vegan orange chicken or something, right? But then the mom and pop store right next door is going out of business and closing up because you're spending your money there. Another example, there's not a lot of vegan grocery stores. So I have to go to Whole Foods. And yes, they have one small section and they've got all the Veal Life, all my tofu. It's all nicely, you know, conveniently put for me there. And then I buy my jackfruit and I buy my stuff. And of course they have fruits and vegetables and stuff. So I get all that stuff, the organic. But right next to there, they have land, sea. They call them sea. You can shop at the sea, and they got fish. They've got their butcher for the ham and the cat. And you give them your $100 now, and more than half of that's going back to the meat industry. And there's nothing we can do because there's not the vegan economy isn't big enough to have a vegan grocery store that's has vegan workers and vegan, you know, thinkers. And so this is what I mean by the vegan economy. Like,
your message is to existing vegans to support vegan businesses in their entirety. And I guess for, you know, people who are flexitarian meat eaters, to give them the option to support those corporations until they completely transition.
Yeah, that would be amazing. There's a place called Makin Sushi, vegan sushi. And, you know, I take all the friends I have that are still eating meat and we take them there because it's like the best mock, you know, fish stuff. And they've got mushroom rolls and all kind of stuff. And they say this is one of the best sushi places I've ever been to.
Yeah. You
know, my life. And they say we love it because it doesn't have the fishy smell. Like humans, we don't like the fishy smell, you know. Cats, the lions, they like the fishy smell, you know. Because they're carnivores, right? They love it. We're like, oh, that's going to make that might be bad. You know,
Right.
My point is yes. So those people are coming and then they're giving their money into the vegan, fully vegan establishment. And it's beautiful. And so all I say is just think about it and really understand. And there's so much room for existing vegans to be entrepreneurs and to create that grocery store. And to do like in the farmer's market. I mean, you know, it's still, they got some people selling fish and stuff like that, but we go to the farmer's market, we support the local farms and they're selling vegetables. Now we're growing a lot of stuff too here. I'm growing sorrel. Do you know sorrel?
No, what is that?
It's a spinach, but it has a lemon tang on the leaf.
Oh, nice.
So I got to research it. I think it could be the original spinach because—
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because in Europe, that's why I asked, because in Europe, they have sorrel a lot, like in Russia and stuff, Eastern Europe. But we grow that and the animals don't eat it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like the bunnies and the mice.
They don't like the taste, the lemon. Yeah. We would like, you know, when we saute spinach, we would put lemon on top. Yeah. So that's best of both worlds.
That's what I'm saying. It's amazing. And then we juice it, but we grow collard greens. We have unlimited mint on my property. Like I could have a mint farm. I mean, so much mint. And we feed the animals with a lot of the sorrel and the mint. We do a lot of teas for us. And we grow, you know, the stuff in the summer. So I would encourage everybody to grow. And lately we've been sprouting, which is going to be, you know, we're growing lentil sprouts, alfalfa sprouts right in the kitchen. You don't even need sun.
Yeah. Great. Fantastic.
Grow sprouts. So you can really support the vegan economy. Now, also, let's talk about the stock market, right? There is funds out there, private funds that you could, you know, get with that, where you could give them X amount of money, $50,000, and they go look for vegan technology companies that will, you know, kind of disrupt the current meat industry. Because, you know, there's over 200 products, according to what I was reading and we were discussing this, 200 products that are made from a cow that are used in the world, in the medical field. You got collagen,
yeah,
right? That is used in the medical field. Someone was telling me, you may know her, Jenny from Vegan Woman Summit.
Yeah, she's been on the show, actually. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's amazing with the economic stuff, right?
Totally.
And I'm wanting to meet more people, and she's got it dialed in. And she was telling me that there's something like 20%, and this has to be verified, 20% of the farms that are disrupting the rainforest, all those, the farmland is for collagen.
Oh, really? Like collagen production, because they're farming the animals in order to produce collagen, you mean?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the Amazon rainforest, a huge proportion of why they're cutting it down is to actually make soya, not to feed us, but to feed the overconsumption of animals. So that could be part of it as well.
Okay, right. So the soy feeds the cows that are used for the collagen production.
For the collagen, right. Yeah, exactly.
Can I tell you, I went to the Dodgers game, the baseball game.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't have one vegan option, not one in the food. So we're talking about food. A lot of people think vegan is always about food. And it's like, so I felt uncomfortable there. Which is okay. I'm used to feeling this way in this world that we're living in, right? You know, my hair, I've always felt, you know, a little.
At least you have hair. I'm glad you have hair.
Yeah. So we both get made fun of sometimes, you know, for the opposite reasons. But I mean, it's not okay that they didn't have the vegan options, but it's room to grow, right?
Yeah.
But
by the way, in England, there's a football club called Forest Green Rovers. One of the world's best stadiums. It's all eco stadium, but the football team are only served vegan plant-based products, and they only serve it on site. So you have to come there, and at least you'll be sport for choice when you come over.
Oh, that's incredible. See, that's what I'm talking about, is more of this stuff, because I got to tell you the facts on the baseball. So they didn't have vegan. We went to Shake Shack, which is a place, they have a mushroom burger. Okay. And I said, oh, okay. And it said vegetarian. I said, why isn't it not vegan? They go, oh, they put melted cheese inside the mushroom burger.
Not like sitting on top that you can.
No. They inject.
Oh, that's so weird.
And I said, that's fancy. Why would you almost like, because maybe I could take off the cheese. Weird, right? So I'm like, okay, I don't know. That is just really weird. So I go up to the Emeralds Club, and that's a club, like an exclusive club. And it costs $70 for the buffet. I said, can I check out the buffet? They go, yeah.
Yeah.
They had three vegan salads, and they were good salads, like walnuts, pine, you know, they had, it was big, you know, good salads. And I said, okay. But I noticed, I said, oh, they're called V2. And I said, what's V2? They go, oh, well, V1 is vegetarian and V2 is vegan. And I said, oh, why not just vegan? I mean, or veg or V, but why such the V1, V2? I said, they don't even want to say the word vegan, right?
Yeah.
In the stadium. And right. I asked, left. And I said, why? I just said, why don't they want anything? And I said, oh, because vegan means not harming animals. I said, does baseball contribute to that? I go, oh, the ball is made of cowhide, of leather. And I researched it, got on the ChatGPT. You got to still do due diligence even on there. I said, how many baseballs are made a year in the pro baseball? They said 2.5 million. And I said, are those the cowhide? They said, yes, they use all cowhide. It's kind of required in the professional baseball. I said, how much do they cost? They cost $7 to make. I said, who makes them? Rawlings makes them. I said, how much does it cost just for the cowhide itself? They said, oh, there's one company, there's one farm, is a meat producing farm that sells meat, but one of their byproducts is the cowhide, and they make about $1.50. So I said, okay, well, let's round it down to $1. So this farm is making $2.5 million a year from just the baseballs. Rowling does make synthetic baseballs, as Wilson makes synthetic basketballs and soccer balls. And that was one of my questions. And, you know, I wanted to ask if the soccer ball was vegan from that soccer company, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So then the gloves are all leather, most of them, but they make synthetic. And those farms are from China that make the gloves because it's so much. But the baseball, the point is that the baseball was one farm in America somewhere, I can't remember, Pennsylvania, Tennessee. And so who's fighting? Because Rawling can make synthetic. That the Major League Baseball can convince everybody that we're going to go to synthetic baseballs, not a big deal. No one's going to know the difference. But who's going to know is that farm is going to lose $1 million. I mean, $2.5 million. They're going to lose a dollar per baseball. And they don't want that. And that's what we're up against is it's a money thing. It's economics. So Jenny said, and this is exciting. She goes, yeah, no one is going to do it for ethics. Basically, I don't want to quote her, but she's like, I do things for ethics and all that stuff as a consumer. But, you know, the medical industry, let's say for the collagen, this is what they've got. They've like, we have, if someone makes a plant-based collagen that will work in the medical industry and it's cheaper, they'll do it.
Yeah.
It's about economics. It has to be cheaper because there's mushroom leather baseballs. There's cactus. You could do it, but it might cost $5 a baseball just for the cactus leather, right?
Yeah.
So it's not economically viable, but if someone invents, and this is my calling to the vegan community and the tech community, the schools, the Cambridge, the MIT, the stuff, if you can invent a plant-based material that is cheaper than the cowhide, which shouldn't be that hard because it's pretty expensive to have cows and the this and the that and all the people you have to do, you know, and sustainable for the environment or for collagen, you know, let's say if the plant-based collagen, then the medical industry doesn't really want to kill the animals. They don't want to have that blood on their hands. They really don't. But if the inventions are all skewed to, you know, using animal products, we got to teach our young kids and our inventors to not even invent stuff that has an animal in the product chain, right? And some of the, I mean, hey, if we were farmers and we made money, we would pay scientists to keep inventing stuff that had the cow in there, right? Like the biodiesel, like where they're saying, hey, let's use cow manure. So the gas companies are making fuel out of the manure. And I'm saying, no, now there's another reason to keep the cow in because they're like, oh, we make diesel now out of it. And I'm saying, no, get the cow off and let the cow graze and be an animal and be spiritual and just use our brains and, you know, let's use synthetic materials or plant-based stuff or, you know, something else. So, and let's choose our investments wisely. You know, I've invested in a lot of sustainable and plant-based companies in my overall portfolio.
These are private companies and listed companies that you've invested in?
Yes. I have personal investments in private companies. In the sprouting company, there's a sprouting company that's making a new sprouter that's made a manual sprouter, and then they're making an automatic sprouter. And I've invested with them.
What's that company called? So people
can look
them up.
The Sprouting Company.
Great.
Yeah. I'm going to send you a sprouter at the end. Put your address in this chat. I'm giving you a sprouter.
Awesome.
It changed my life. I just eat the sprouts in the morning and all throughout the day, really. Best nutrients, broccoli, alfalfa. It is incredible.
So, I'm going to send you some vegan cookies, a company that I invested in. It's called Eat Virgin. And I don't know if you know N.E.L. Chopper. He's also a founder.
They have bars too?
Yeah, bars, yeah.
Yeah.
You know N.E.L. Chopper?
I heard of that name.
Yeah. He's his actual name is Bryson Potts. He's an investor in there. He's one of these younger rappers. Yeah, he's pretty cool. So he's one of the co-founders. But
N.E.L. Chopper had that song that was really big on TikTok.
Yeah.
And they had a dance.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah. That's how I know the name.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to get him to send you some. But let's talk about that and popular culture. I think going back to your point about vegan word associations and people not liking to call the word vegan. And obviously, from a food point of view, we'll say plant-based if they're on a diet. But I think popular culture, i.e. music, does drive opinions, and especially artists who are vocal about this. If I think about somebody like RZA from Wu-Tang Clan, Lenny Kravitz is very vocal as well. Jermaine Dupri, all these amazing artists, Leona Lewis, even Will.i.am.
Billie Eilish,
exactly, Billie Eilish. They're all doing their thing. They do talk about it. Maya, for example, as well, she talks about it. What do you think should be done differently, or in addition to those artists talking about stuff? Because I feel they could be doing more. Maybe they can collaborate more.
Well, here's the thing. To tie up the thing, it'll lead into this. But for the baseball thing, that's why the word vegan, there is no vegan hot dog thing, because they don't want the consumers to be vegan. Because then they're going to say, hey, let's use a synthetic baseball. Let's use it, right? So there's a pushback. So the artists are doing naturally what they should do. They talk about it. Jermaine Dupri has his ice cream company. Billie Eilish is got her Little Pine restaurant coming soon, you know, or it's now. And she talks about it. The issue is, and this is why I retired, one of the reasons why, is because when I get hired to do a show, they may pay me $40,000,
$50,000. DJing, or is it a show?
Festivals,
yeah.
DJ stuff. But what I realized is they say Red Foo's going to be there, right? And I saw a promo one time at a place in Catalina, which is an island outside of here. And they're like, here's the promo. Here's the, you know, and I ended up not doing the show, but because the promo was like, they had people eating burgers and they were eating shrimp and they were like, and Red Foo's going to perform.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, this is the issue. I don't want people
be associated with it. Yeah.
I don't want to be associated, and I don't want the meat eating company. I mean, you know, it's a music company, but they make their money on selling this stuff to drunk partygoers who want some shrimp, that it's a concept, right? We're going on an island, right? And we're going to drink and all this stuff. And I had since stopped drinking as well.
Right.
So I haven't drank in about 5 years.
Amazing. Congrats.
Not even a sip.
Yeah.
Right? Because I've been coding. I want my mind to be sharp. Anyways, so then I said, oh, so that means that every show I've done, there was somebody getting rich, some meat company getting rich off of the things that we're going to consume. So I said, oh, these events need to be vegan. And it doesn't need to be talked about necessarily, but that's like, I think Morrissey, right?
Yeah, Morrissey too, yeah, for sure.
I don't think he'll do a show. For his show, he could do the Staples Center or he could do a big arena. I think he says for that night, everything is vegan. Like,
yeah, amazing. Yeah, I completely understand what you mean.
Back to the economics.
It's such a core part of your life being this way ethical to also start in a way demanding that. And have you ever, by the way, come across Vegan Dale? Did they contact you? Have you spoken with them at all?
I have. I think I've been going on back and forth on some emails. They caught me at a time where I had retired and into coding and, you know, pregnant. My partner was pregnant with Eileen, the baby, who's a year old now. And
congrats.
Didn't want to travel, didn't want to do this stuff. But I'm starting to slowly get back into performing under the right circumstances. And it's been very slow because, you know, and I think I have to start either throwing my own events and only working with vegan events because I feel so good around.
It feels great. I'm totally with you on that.
And the people, and there's just a level of ethics. Anybody that's still eating meat now watching this, I'm telling you, your life will light up. You will feel happier for no other reason, just knowing that you're not contributing to killing any animals. So we do vegan events. Like my birthday party, We had vegan vendors. We do Friendsgiving at my house. It's a vegan potluck. And we say before the meal, no animals were harmed in the making of this food. Let's eat. Simple. And Right. Everybody, yeah, you know, and it feels so good. And everybody loves the food. They're coming back for seconds and thirds. They're not getting tired. They don't have to worry about, you know, the 20 vaccines the animal had before it was finally chopped up. People have no clue what is going into these animals before. From a health standpoint, it's horrific. And now they got the new H1N1 virus coming back. The bird flu is coming back in the animals because they're feeding the cows chicken feed, chicken in the feed.
It's insane.
And this is some articles out, you know, I just saw that, you know, like last night, but it's just all the time and it's just disgusting. But man, it feels good to, like, you know, I've got cows and everybody says, oh, do you drink the milk? And I said, well, they have to be pregnant to drink the milk. And I got them off the auction block through a sanctuary, Buster's Barn, and they had already been dehorned and already been neutered and spayed and things. So no, the cow will never produce milk, just like a human female, a woman won't produce milk unless she has a baby.
Yeah, and people don't always get that, you know? They don't realize that they have to be artificially impregnated. You're a father now, and congratulations on your one-year-old. And it's also great to hear that you've written a children's book. And
yes.
Do you want to tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, it was a dream come true because it was my mother and I. They call her Mom Fu, and she's vegan as well. And we set out to write a book, just to write it, actually about Catalina, the place I mentioned. And we renamed it in the book, Dogalina, because it's about kind of the animals. And it's a book called Little Red Foo's Ridiculous Adventure. It's on Amazon. And we started writing it about 2 years ago, but Jasmine got pregnant with Eileen like a year ago. So I really started saying, hey, this is a book for the children. This is a book for the future of our, you know, world. And what values and what ideas do we want them to have? And so it's a book about me as a kid going to the island, Dogalina, with my mom. And we see that animals are running the whole island. So there's a llama named Sarge who's in charge. By the way, the whole book rhymes.
Nice.
And this is pre-ChatGPT.
So, you created it just using your mind.
Yeah. With Zooming with the illustrator, Rhonda, and my mom. And we were just writing, and we've got a Nutty Pizza. A squirrel has a business called Nutty Pizza, serves a vegan slice, you know. And it's not like, it's just a fun tale, and I won't get into it, but Little Red Foo meets a puppy that's doesn't have a home.
And what age group is it for in terms of the children who would be reading it? Obviously, parents would be reading it alongside their child.
I don't know. It's funny. I think we put 2 and up, but we've given it to all the parents that have newborns because they read it. And the kids, it's so colorful. So I think it's just from birth to when you leave Earth. I mean, you know, the whole time. It's for everybody because the parents, and that's a big thing, is the parents. I would love to educate the parents. Luckily, we didn't have a lot of medical people saying, oh, you're vegan, you know, you're going to have a vegan baby. All they said is just keep your levels up, keep your iron and your protein up. And they were almost like, we don't care what you eat as long as your blood comes back, great. And Jasmine always had an issue with iron. And so we started eating more of that Sorel and making that juice. Wow. And she was doing some iron supplements. And now she was through the roof in iron by the time she gave birth.
You've raised her completely vegan from birth, right? A year old, and you've checked her out. She's fine. She's thriving.
Thriving like a mofo. Like, I'm talking about, like, bigger than all the kids at 1 year old. We feed her bananas. Now, breast milk, breastfeeding, like, the number one thing, like,
100%,
And Jasmine is with her 24/7, and then Mom Fu or Grandma Lala, and then and our friends. But we give Eileen to everybody to hold. She's, you know, We feel like she can have some germs. You know, we let her play in the grass as long as she's not eating rocks and weird stuff. All five dogs, she's around the dogs. And we feed her bananas, avocado, blueberries. She's been eating a little bit of some of the bread, which I say, come on, you know, but we'll have like organic sourdough little bit because, you know, even as a vegan, it's like some of the processed stuff is unnecessary anyways, but a lot of sweet potato. And interesting enough, they have these fruit pouches.
Oh, yeah.
She was eating the fruit pouches. It's a big popular thing, but she developed a sniffle. Well, by the way, she's already been to Australia. She's been to Miami, the baby.
Traveling
stuff.
Around.
Just to keep, you know, her exposed to everything. But she had the sniffle, a little sniffle, you know, and I'm like, that could be something she's eating. So I said, hey, why are we giving her these pouches? Oh, well, it's easier to travel. And, you know, I said, but can't we just mash up the blue, you know? And it is when you're traveling, sometimes you just go to home.
Convenience. Yeah.
But I said, hey, there could be something in the plastic. There could something, be toxins, something. We took away the pouches, immediately sniffle gone.
Wow.
So we just make all the food.
That's like, awesome.
And she is, she's almost walking. She's crawling everywhere.
She's cruising. She's on things. Grabbing stuff. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, standing up, and she can stand a little bit, and then she's saying words. She's saying hi, bye. We've been to the pediatrician like twice or three times. Every time they just go, she's incredible, she's great. Because sometimes you go and they find stuff. We were told that had to cut her tongue because she wasn't breastfeeding the first 2 days. It was like a little slow, but it's always slow. The first 2 days. So they're like, oh, we need to snip the tongue. And then we researched it. Luckily, ChatGPT was out now because we could research stuff.
Yeah.
We could go right up to the doctor and say, oh, really? Oh, you recommend this? Oh, well, hold on. And then we'd say, well, you know, it has this ingredient, or we know it's not so organic.
Are you saying some doctors actually said they wanted to cut her tongue in order for her to drink more?
Yes.
Really? I've never heard of that. That's nuts.
I know. And they say for the last 6 years, and it's just a quick $300, $400 procedure. And they were recommending it. Everybody was.
That sounds so wrong to a little baby. It's just crazy.
And people are doing it. They're snipping, you know, the little string that holds your tongue like that.
Oh, yeah.
And they just do a little snip. And I said, No, this is not.
Please don't. That just,
there's so many things. And I recommend everybody get your ChatGPT subscription, get it and ask it everything. Now, sometimes it's biased.
You saw the episode that I did on AI ethics.
I got to watch it.
I'll send it to you afterwards. Yeah, it's a company when you're talking about ethical companies looking at the biases within AI and the results it gives. So it's a company called Open Paws. It's to try and help animal advocacy groups and also these larger companies like OpenAI, Google, Microsoft, in order to make sure that these biases aren't embedded inside their outputs and their training data and stuff like that. But, let's definitely have a look. So when it comes to coding, by the way, what project are you actually working on? Is there something that you're trying to create at the moment?
Yeah, so I've been coding for about since going vegan. It's like my brain went on fire.
And what language are you coding in? Is it like Python or something like that?
Okay, yes. So now I'm multilingual. I'm using all the languages. I started out with Swift a little bit for the iPhone.
Yeah.
I was like, I just want to know, how do you hit a button and it knows that you hit it? And I was like going and... So I made actually a vegan near me. Tell me the vegan near me.
Nice.
And I got with the maps, the iPhone Maps API. And I wanted to say vegan near me. And then it listed. That was the first kind of app I made. And it was just for a hobby, right?
Right.
So then I learned. And then I went into JavaScript and I did a game. Right. called Noisy Foo, which you can see it. You can play it after this. It uses your voice. It's like Flappy Bird.
Oh, but yeah.
It has a flying foo. Right. And you use your voice to make it fly. So you go,
okay.
And
right, right.
That was all JavaScript. And that's when I learned coding the most. And it uses P5, which is a variation of JavaScript for the web. Then I started getting into, I did some Unity stuff, some 3D stuff. And that was C sharp. I got into Python because I wanted to get into making trading bots. So I made a trading bot for crypto in Python. And then I made one for stocks using Ameritrade API in Python. Then I made a voice dictation to my computer through Python, which was very advanced. Before ChatGPT and all that stuff, I could say, play a song, and it would go to YouTube and play any song, like a free music player. I did a social network just with my voice. So I'd say, create a profile and put this picture in, and they would open up my webpage and go to select a URL for a picture. And so I had voice control over apps using Python. Now I went back to iOS, and now Flutter, which is cross-platform, Flutter does Android and iOS, and I'm developing a tennis app called Time Ball because I'm super passionate about tennis. Right. And that app is almost out. And that's what I spend most of my time coding is Time Ball. But for Eileen's birthday, I made a photo booth in 4 hours on Flutter, and that was a hit of the party. So I'll make apps and I've made a lot of AI stuff. I had an AI that had my voice as the output during the pregnancy before ChatGPT had where you could speak to it and speaks to you back.
Right.
I built one. I had literally the first one using 11 labs, using the voice cloning.
Right.
I cloned my voice, used ChatGPT API, used the protocol Whisper to transcribe my voice to say, hey, tell me about collagen in the vegan world or whatever, right?
Right.
And it comes back as my voice.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you feel about, especially being a musician too, around the voice cloning of artists? And some artists have been quite vocal about standing their ground against that, for example. But you, who have also been into technology, also like will.i.am is very much into technology and AI as well, and creativity. Yeah. To experiment with this stuff. Where do you stand on that topic?
I think technology is technology, right? And sometimes to prove things, they will take anything. They'll take any vocal, anything to do to prove that it works. I think infringement is infringement. You know, if you're stealing someone's voice and then making an AI model from that voice, it's still copyright infringement regardless of the technology. However, there's no however to that. That's just kind of illegal to do, right? So if you're getting a model of Drake's voice, I came in with my ex like Selena, it's basically a collection of samples that have put into an intelligent algorithm, which is the AI model, and it's still using the Drake sound of the voice to imitate Drake or to imitate Redfoo or anybody's voice.
Or Jay-Z, for example. I'm addicted to buying unbelievably
expensive custom helicopters. Yeah,
it sounds so much like them that you can't really realize that it's not.
Because it is bits and pieces in there of their voice. It is like,
right,
them.
Right.
I mean, it's not just, right? And so that's copyright infringement. However, the AI that says, hey, I'm a voice actor, you can pay me and I will read a 1,000-word book for 30 minutes and I will sell you my voice. And now you can use that in AI applications for book reading like Snoop has done. I think he's officially done it with some AI companies where you can pick his voice. And I think, so there's nothing wrong with that at all. Because it's legal, right? It's but to experiment, the industry is going to just take anything and experiment to prove the concept. But I think, like, I want my voice to be cloned so I can just say to AI, write a song about this, and I tell it what to write, but it's my voice.
And the important thing is that you're in control over it versus somebody else, right?
Yeah, I would love that. And then for my character, you know, I would love an AI. I have one. If you look at the story on my Instagram about my turkey, that was AI voice, which sounds kind of obvious when you think about it, because people are like, because it changes. It goes into an English accent, actually.
Oh, really? I'm going to inject it into the show.
In the still of the night, under the watchful moon, a story of feathers and fortitude unfolded in my backyard. There I was at the stroke of midnight, heart pounding, eyes wide. Poor Janet, my beloved turkey, lay there, a warrior in a flurry of feathers, her rear wounded, a testament to a battle with an unseen foe. Be it raccoon or bobcat, we'll never know. As I approached, Janet's eyes met mine, a silent plea for help. Our bond stronger than ever in that fleeting moment. Dawn broke, and with it a glimmer of hope. The emergency room's verdict, a 50-50 chance, but for Janet, I'd take those odds any day. Just keep her skin from turning into turkey jerky, they said. Easier done than said. Home now, her new abode. A dog kennel amidst five canines, bewildered yet accepting of this feathery family member. Days filled with laser treatments, gourmet meals of seeds, kale, and her favorite, bananas. Janet, once just a turkey, now a symbol of resilience, a beacon of hope. In Janet's eyes, I saw a reflection of all animals, each unique, each with a story. Janet's journey, a testament. It's better to feed than to feast, to cherish than to chomp. Janet's tale, a feathery fable of love and survival.
Even the visual, no one knows. The visual was AI.
Oh, okay, nice.
They did the fake, but it's me. And I love it because AI helped me write the story about my turkey, which I gave it all the bullet points. My turkey got attacked by a raccoon or a bobcat. I don't know. It's bleeding. I'm going to insert some photos. We went to the emergency room. I said this to ChatGPT. I said, write me a dramatic script that tells this story. And it wrote it all in the car. And then I went and put that script into 11 Labs. And then took it and then got the AI video of me, which I did for Christmas cards, but then I use it also for the turkey, you know? And so I love the technology, but I'm in control and it was fun. And so I use AI to code all the time. That's why I can code, I'm coding in C++ for the Arduinos, for the Raspberry Pi, which I know a little bit about, but when you want to build a Halloween stuff with spiders coming up and down on strings and you only got a day to do it, you get the ChatGPT, you're like, hey, I need to build this. This is the motor I'm using. What's the code to get it to run forward, backwards, you know?
Yeah.
And it, boom, spits it out in 15 seconds.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
No, and so AI is incredible. It's like having that expert that you never had around for anything, for math, for learning.
Totally.
There's even science books in schools that have biases. I mean, you know, we just got to keep evolving and learning. Like, there's bias everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing. Even I'll search and I'll say, what's a good diet? And it'll say, like, a balanced diet is, you know, some fish, some eggs, some this. And I'll say, well, can't I just eat all plants? And they say, oh, well, when you eat plants, it might be hard to get what's in the fish oil. What's the...
Omega.
Omega-3s, yeah. Right? And I'll say, oh, really? And I say, well, what do the fish eat to get the omega-3s? And they go, oh, well, they eat algae. And so I say, well, can I just eat the algae? Can I eat seaweed? Or what other plants have omega-3s? They say, well, flaxseed has a lot.
Exactly.
And I say, can I just eat that? They go, yeah. So I said, oh, so I don't need to eat fish. They go, yeah, my mistake. You don't need that. You can live. But because AI is critical. So it has biased information, but it's also, it has reasoning logic built in. Like, it's been coded. So you can actually, you can say, but so then I can eat flax seeds. And they go, yeah, you actually can. And did you know that fact? Did you hear that about flax seeds and the absorption of them to the human body.
Are you talking about when it's ground or when it's whole flax seeds?
Well, I'm talking about some people say the absorption level to the human body of the omega-3s from the flax seeds, it's not always constant, right? It's like when you get the fish, they say you eat the fish and you get all of the omega-3s absorbed by your body. It's easier with the fish. Some people say that. And they say, but the flax seeds, it varies. Sometimes your body rejects it. Sometimes it absorbs it. And that's why it could be difficult. But then there was a study that came out that said the difference in the absorption rate for flax seeds is by nature's design, because your body knows how much omega-3s it has and it knows how much it needs. And if it only needs 10% from what you're eating, it'll only get 10%.
Right.
But when it eats the animal product, it doesn't recognize that food. And so it just absorbs all of it. So you actually get more omega-3s than you need, which could be toxic.
Totally.
And they're saying that that the plants and your body, since they were meant to be eaten together, they have this communication and it self-regulates. So that's why, you know, doctors will say, yeah, you can drink this herb tea and you can never overdose, because your body will just eliminate the excess, right? Or like with vitamin C, they'll be like, yeah, you can't overdose because you'll just either poop it out or throw it up, or, you know, it's not going to absorb. But with the meat stuff, your body has no awareness. So you can look that up. We can find this article.
I haven't seen that before. So it'd be great to see that.
Incredible.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
There's so much science we don't know about. Well, we know the benefits, right? We've seen it ourselves. We experienced it, you know, become more aware of your fellow animal and you become more spiritual. And one thing I was going to ask you just to end on was what you thought about Christspiracy. I know you went to the premiere. I've seen it here in London. I'll be interviewing the film director soon. So it'll be great to hear, to close on what you think about the film. And obviously we've spoken a lot about the spirituality side of veganism. And in the beginning you spoke about the lie, I guess. Not to give too much away, I don't think we should, but we could probably touch on some of it. I know they're trying to keep some of the findings in the film a bit more secret until it's formally released, I guess.
Is there a spiritual way to kill an animal? I'll put it this way. How would Jesus kill an animal?
I thought the film was amazing. Top three best films of my whole life, because this is important. The story. I grew up hearing religious stories about Jesus, about Samson. I never cut my hair since 1994, largely because I remember Samson didn't cut his hair and he had his strength from those biblical stories. And the bottom line is that the movie is kind of like, you know, ask a question, how would Jesus kill an animal, right? Conspiracy. And it kind of goes to answer that question by interviewing a lot of people all over the world, you know, religious professors and just people throughout the movie, you know, a lot of experts, theologians and things like that. And to know, to feel like there's been a cover-up, because we know that religious texts get changed all the time. They get modified. Mm. There's different versions and all of them to suit the current group of people that they kind of rewrite them and stuff. And they're good guidelines for moral and ethical behavior. And the idea that Jesus most likely, it's not really a spoiler alert, but didn't eat meat and actually was probably against the killing of animals is a truth, whether it's a truth or at least a fable, at least a tale. You know, it's like these stories are, and going back to the question, it's like, what can we do more of? This is it. Kids and parents need more ethics. Focus on that. And the religion is like, everybody thought they were safe. Like, I'll just join a religion. They'll tell me what to believe and I'll be safe. But it comes out that some of the religions, you know, thou shall not kill is like in all the religions.
Mm.
So the question is, and the movie kind of answers this, so then why are we killing animals?
Yeah.
Right? If it's thou shalt not kill, and it doesn't say anything thou shalt not kill humans, but you can kill the, it doesn't say that in any of them. And so why have we interpreted that as just humans? Because when I kill a fly by accident or a mosquito, I still do it by accident. I get a little like, and I go, oh, you know, and I go, and then I, sometimes I kill it. It breaks my heart. Like, as silly as it sounds, it to a hip dude, but like it does. And I'm like, why did I have to do that? Why? I reacted, you know, stop being so fidgety and jumpity and just look at it and then, you know, kind of take it outside. Or you see a spider and you're like stomping, you know, hey, you know, you can put it outside. Now there's a new study where if you put your spider outside, it's still going to die, which I don't know.
Don't tell me that.
No, I don't know if it's true. I
would imagine there's different types of spiders, right, that live in your house.
Right. And it probably came spiders in from outdoors, right?
Yeah.
That's how sensitive I am. But like the children. So, you know, to leave it at this, Christspiracy is a must-see. It's amazing. And it's a very wonder. You get a great feeling and you're very inspired after that movie. And you're inspired to even be a bigger fan of Christ. So don't think it's like, right.
And like, do you follow a certain faith yourself?
This is what I follow. Growing up, I was kind of raised a little Christian, you know, the stories and stuff. I've looked at them all. I've been around some people, those spiritual people. I think they were more like channeling auras and just spiritual. Agape is science of mind, which we went to a little bit, which is just the universe and spirit. And this is what I am now. And I kind of have made this up, but this is the best thing. I am win-win. And this is really deep to me. I get the goosebumps. Because in every transaction in business, you try to formulate a win-win where in everything I do, I win. So if you eat meat and you love the taste of steak and you're like, I'm winning. I'm eating it. You win, but the cow loses. So it's not a win-win.
Right.
It's actually a secret lose-lose because you actually are losing because it's not as healthy. You don't even know that. It's not, right?
Yeah.
So people be like, oh, I love to fish. Well, the fish don't love it, right? It's not a win-win. So in life, I've structured everything to be a win-win, just like an AI. When you steal JC's voice and you make an album, you're winning because you did it and you got some money, but Jay-Z's losing.
Yeah.
So it's not a win-win. So it doesn't work. And I base everything I do in that. Oh, so you got to have the three wins in vegan. So if you go vegan, you win, the animals win, the environment wins and there's one more. Oh, and the health and your health win.
Yeah.
So there's these three, you know, wins. But so for our daughter, I'm teaching her win-win and you treat people nice. Obviously you got to defend yourself. You got to be head on a swivel. My friend says, when you're walking in the streets, you know, you gotta survive. But in general, win-win with everything and you will become a spiritual being because it'll work. So that's kind of the thing. But obviously thou shalt not kill any animals. I mean, I have some commandments that we've built and we are kind of like talking about with the daughter. But she will know that when her friends are eating chicken nuggets, because she does have some non-vegan friends, she will know what that is, that that's a dead chicken. Like, there's no like, no, don't tell them. Like, no. She will know everything truth. Like,
That's fantastic that you're teaching her at such a young age. And I wish that more children were to be able to be brought up this way and know the truth. And I really like that winning for the planet and the animals and humans, right? And amazing.
Yeah. So I hope to, first of all, I just got to thank you for you doing what you're doing because you are lessening the gap. You know, there's a gap, there's a void. And you're filling the void by doing what you're doing. And if more people were doing what you're doing is having discussions about this stuff. And let's be honest, you can make money saving the world, saving humanity, saving the animals, you know, because you can either make money destroying the world and hurting the animals, or you can make money saving them. So what you're doing is, because you can blog about anything. I mean, you could have a platform, but you've chosen to highlight veganism and vegan entrepreneurs and tech people, vegan tech, and just everything. And so you're doing amazing. And I just want to thank you, even your name, you know, Plant CEO, right? It's just like putting everything in our names, our shirts, you know.
Exactly.
I realized that I need more shirts. Like, it took me a second to find the right shirt that I wanted to wear.
Yeah.
And so I got vegan and I know it shirts.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And actually, I'm going to be at the Vegan Woman Summit May 9th and 10th. And we're going to be speaking and doing some book stuff. So if you're in town,
I'm not sure, but if you're ever in London, definitely look me up and you can come over here and have some vegan food with me. If you're looking to do a performance, I can get my rock band involved and they'll be happy to do a song with you. If you want to do something at a vegan festival like Vegan Dale or something, let me know. We can definitely collab on that. And yeah thank you so much for your kind words.
Yeah, maybe you guys can, because I usually perform and I DJ and I have a band too.
Oh, awesome. Right.
Do a whole set.
And we could.
You guys could be the band and we could do it.
Let's do that. That would be amazing. Yeah. And you are a wonderful guy. Thank you so much for telling your story. You're very passionate about this and it's great to inspire other people from what you've done as well. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah. And thank you so much. And I want to say one documentary that we didn't say is The Game Changers.
Right. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's like the strong vegans in the sports and stuff. So I just remembered that just now.
Exactly.
But anyways, hey, it's been great and thank you so much. And I can't wait to see the final edit.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks again and let's stay in touch and see you again soon.
Yeah, baby. Hey, work on your musical chops. We're going to do that show.
Let's do it. Take care. Bye.
Yeah, baby.